Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial 929 FM or 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio dial and you want to stay up to date with everything happening here at the station, you can do so by downloading the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen, stream anywhere, anytime. You can also even listen on demand. George Ruggiero is producing the program for us. Glad that he is with us. You can follow him on Twitter on X at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
How are you guys doing? Before we introduce the guest, a little sneak peek. He tried to let me down easy last week. I did not listen to him, sadly.
About Michigan State?
Potentially.
I think you got to say this. Like,
it's a good game.
I thought that game was going to go one of two ways. I thought Ole Miss was going to win, or I thought Michigan State would kind of beat them by double digits. And I was wrong on that. So we'll welcome in, of course, the man that writes about college basketball for CBS Sports and college football as well for CBS Sports. Follow him on Twitter, on X, at David W. Cobb. Here we go. I think you'd have to say when you watch the Ole Miss-Michigan State game, maybe the result didn't surprise you, but I think the way the game played out probably surprised you.
Yeah, Ole Miss kind of had it there. It felt like they were on level playing field. They are not a good rebounding team, and they rebounded with Michigan State for a fair chunk of that game, which in the end, I almost think it makes it more heartbreaking in the NCAA tournament when your team hangs around, looks like they're going to pull an upset, and then they fall short. That's actually more heartbreaking and harder to deal with than what we saw with Tennessee and Houston, where you just get run off the floor.
No,
and then you can just let it go.
I completely agree with you. Because Hurd and I have argued about this. As a coach, he's like, I don't want to get blown out because, you know, you want to at least stay in the game and give yourself a chance. But I'm watching the game with my wife, and my wife's an Ole Miss fan, and she's just like, this is the worst. It's like, why do you think I always say, if it's a playoff game, if it's anything, knock me out? Like, I would much rather get beat like Tennessee did. I don't want to sit there and relitigate every single play in the last 5 minutes, think about every single call that could have gone one way, a bounce that could have gone another. Like, that's torture as a sports fan.
It's the worst. And the NCAA tournament is so the finality of it is just every game's game seven, and you're down to the wire, and it rips your heart out. And I would much rather be the Tennessee not as the coach. You don't want to get run off the floor as the coach, but as the fan, yeah.
No, as the fan, go ahead and do that for me. All right, let's talk about what we got coming up on the program. So the Grizzlies last night fall to the Boston Celtics. I think a game that we could probably say was more competitive than the final score, but at the same time, like, here we are yet again, another double-digit loss. And yes, I understand Boston did something they've never done before, which is a six-game road trip, and they beat every team by double figures. But I don't know how you felt, Cobb, but watching the game, I was just left with a conclusion that I probably already had, but this is more, so I guess if you want to accuse me of confirmation bias, go ahead. I'm just not convinced a coaching change is going to, in terms of what we have the rest of the way, it's going to make a big difference one way or the other. I think Taylor Jenkins could have lost the game in the same fashion.
Yeah, yes, yes. Taylor Jenkins was just as capable of getting taking a double-digit home loss to the reigning NBA champions as a solo. I agree with you on that front. What are you hoping to accomplish by making the coaching change at this season? You're kind of just peeing into the wind to see if you just can't find some spark out there, right? I mean, there's not really a whole lot to be gained by doing it at this point in the calendar, except maybe Asalo is just so dang impressive, turns it around so quickly that he wins the job. It's like a low stakes audition essentially for him, because I mean, nobody really expects him to do a whole lot, right? Like, we're not actually expecting Asalo to turn this thing around, but hey, if you do, then awesome, we'll just hire you, you know?
Yeah, I think that was something that got left out of the equation on Friday, because obviously when you get the news on Friday, you're kind of just trying to parse through that might have been from our computer. You're just trying to parse through whether it be through phone calls, through, you know, seeing other reports, whatnot, you're trying to figure out, okay, what happened? Because you're obviously going to have... I always feel confident when the Grizzlies make some kind of decision. It's not going to be on the record, but you will find out the Grizzlies spin zone. Usually the way it works, through back channels, whatnot, they'll talk and they'll give their side of the story. And, I mean, I guess I would distill it down to their side of the story is it was such a free fall. We already knew we were making the move. We thought it was over. So let's just go ahead and do it now in the hopes that something turns around. Would you say that was a fair interpretation?
Sure. Yeah, I'll go with you on that.
I don't think we really stopped and asked the question, obviously, which to me is like, why? Like, what could, because you and I think, see this similarly. If Tomas Iasola was given this team at the beginning of the year, okay, maybe I could see where it looks different. But you've got 9 games left, and essentially what you're saying is, we believe that just by removing Taylor Jenkins from this equation, that all of a sudden it's going to get better. And while maybe some players gave a fist pump, it's not players you're depending on. It's not players you're counting on. Like, clearly Gigi Jackson was happy with this move. But, like...
yeah, maybe he's like, maybe I can play now.
Yeah, I mean, by the way, have you? Oh, for 2.
He hasn't, has he, right?
No, 0-2. So, what's actually changed? And whatever schematically he would do differently, like, you have 9 games left. You're not installing a new offense. You're not installing a new defense. Like, I think that we were trying to process everything, and we never even took, like, a step back to just go, says who? And honestly, I think you can look at it this way. Whether or not Kleiman realizes it, Kleiman's probably put a bigger spotlight on him, because now we all get to see. There were people on the internet that legitimately believe Taylor Jenkins is the reason that the Grizzlies were falling apart. And I want to be very clear. I think Taylor Jenkins was a reason. I think there are lots of reasons. But now, what you've done is basically put just this giant spotlight on the actual roster, the players that are playing, and that's your responsibility. And that, I think, is something that was not included in the calculus.
Well, this does a good job from the Grizzlies' side of scapegoating Taylor. Because when you do it at this point in the calendar and everybody sees it, the reaction is, wow, they must have really not liked that guy. That guy must have really gone off the rails here for them to fire him at this point. And so it just scapegoats Taylor in the spotlight in a way that this would go under the radar if this happened during exit interviews after the playoffs, because there would still be other playoff series going on that would be... We wouldn't be talking about this because there would be actual basketball. The free agent market would be on deck. The draft would be on deck, right? But when you do this at this point in the calendar, it becomes a national story. You start to see an in-depth ESPN piece on it, which you wouldn't see if the Grizzlies parted with Taylor Jenkins after the season. So it brings the organization under the microscope. It puts Taylor Jenkins as the fall guy. But we see it all the time, Jeffrey. You and I follow college football so closely. What happens when a head coach fires their defensive coordinator? They're doing it because they need a fall guy. They're doing it because they need a scapegoat. And then the next year, it's their head who's on the chopping block. And I think you can sort of make the equivalency here. In this scenario, Kleiman's like a college football head coach, and Taylor Jenkins is his defensive coordinator.
Except he didn't just fire the defensive
coordinator. In this case, Robert Pera probably went to him and said, "Hey, something's got to change."
The key difference,
Kleiman
though,
says, "Well, don't change it. Don't make it me. I'm gonna get rid of Taylor." You know,
I would say though the key difference is he didn't just say get rid of your defensive coordinator. He said literally fire your whole staff.
Well, that's interesting. We're actually at Evolution 2.
Yeah,
we're at Evolution 2 because Evolution 1 was the staff, complete redirection, reorientation of the staff after last season. That's your first sign that there's some organizational unrest and that they're not happy. Now you've got the second sign here. And so who's left? I mean, if you don't nail this head coaching hire and get this thing going back in the right direction, the next step is we're talking about a new front office instead of talking about a new coach, because there's only so much that Kleiman can do with this roster. We know who the big three are. The players, the key players anyway, aren't going to change. They're not going to have a high lottery level draft pick in this next draft. The players are going to be more or less the same next season, and there's going to be higher scrutiny on Zach Kleiman because of the coach. There's going to be higher scrutiny on Zach Kleiman because what is Zach Edey doing for us as a 2024 lottery guy, right? So the microscope is on Kleiman now. He's done a great job with a lot of what he's done, but it feels like there have been more misses than hits now over the last, let's say, 18 months.
Yeah, I've made the joke that the Grizzlies front office, Zach Kleiman, they're the kid that got like a 35 on the math section of the ACT. And then you ask, well, what'd you get on the ACT? I made a 35 on math. It's like, right, you're leaving out reading, you're leaving out science. Like, what'd you make? And so, yes, they've clearly aced the draft portion. Like, even the misses in the draft are somewhat understandable. The Zaire draft pick, number one, I don't use revisionist history. At that time, they viewed it as, this is our chance to take a big swing. And Zaire fit the profile of a big swing. And if Zaire hit, that changed the trajectory. All right, swing and miss. I also will give them the benefit of the doubt. The COVID draft was just a weird draft. You look like top to bottom. There's a lot of swings and misses in that draft because they couldn't get people. They couldn't work out people. They couldn't get them into the building. Like, there was a lot of reasons that draft went the direction that it did. All right, I'm willing to set that aside. Even with guys like Roddy, which I would say is a swing and miss, like, okay. Like, and LaRavia, I mean, I think you can make a more interesting case of, like, is the bigger problem with this team right now from the trade deadline, forget trading Marcus Smart, but is the bigger issue, Jake LaRavia would be playing and playing well for this team right now.
Well, the hay got put in the barn on that early when they declined his option. What you had seen from LaRavia at the point where you had to make the decision on his option or his qualifying offer or whatever it was, you hadn't seen enough at that point. And then he comes out and balls out in November and December, and it's like, well, dang. Okay, maybe he was taking the strides that we hoped he would earlier in his career. I don't necessarily hold the Jake LaRavia move against him, but I think
Jeffrey, my thing is, like, okay, let's take the idea to extend him. I'm not going to relitigate that. I think that was a coin flip in real time. Like, there was a case to be made. Yes, we had not, because I agree with you. Like, overall, when they had to make the decision, there was not enough evidence to go, you know, we should for sure do this. There was a case of, well, it'll give us a little control, but honestly, that's what they did with Conchar, and it hasn't worked out. So, like, I'm willing to say that was a coin flip either way. But you made a choice to dump him at the deadline when you did not have to. And I equate it to when the Grizzlies had Kyle and they had Tyus and their deals were expiring. They did not, at the time, have the intention of re-signing both. They end up being able to re-sign Tyus because Tyus kind of tested the market. And he's like, all right, give me less years, but a little bit more money, I'll stay. They let Kyle walk because in the end, it's like, they made the choice at the deadline to keep them because they thought they would matter to this team. Like, what you're seeing right now is they've let people walk that I think could at least offer something to this team, because it keeps me coming back to the same question, not only in the short term, but even in the long term. How does this team get better? Because honestly, right now, it seems like the only answer is, well, they play better.
With your hope, and I don't think it's a well-placed hope. I think it's a misplaced hope, actually. New head coach comes in, presses all the right buttons, unlocks the best from this team. The new voice takes this talented core to the next level, that whole deal, right? You get the veteran in there who can yell at them a little bit, kind of get their butt cheeks tight during practice, inspire some fear in them to go out there and play a little defense, right? You know, it's almost like you got to go back in time, because we all look at an organization that needs to take the next step, sometimes they find the coach to help them do that. You look at a Mark Jackson to a Steve Kerr, and he unlocks this stylistic revolution in the Golden State Warriors, and they go on this dynasty, right? And the Grizzlies have this talented young core, and they need that voice to take them to the next level. But the thing is, Taylor Jenkins was this young, analytically minded, future thinking, sort of young, cutting edge, revolutionary head coach. And they doubled down on that whole idea with this international flavor, D3 flavor, cutting edge stuff on the offensive philosophy this season. It didn't work. I think they need to go back in time. They need to go back in time and find themselves a Lionel Hollins. Go and find yourselves a Mark Jackson, somebody with a veteran voice who can unlock the intangibles, right? The intangible side of this Grizzlies team, because on paper they're great. On paper, in theory, on a spreadsheet, they make sense. But there's a lack of toughness, a lack of defense, and you hope that a coach can unlock that. I think that's way too high of a burden to place on an NBA head coach, because in this game at this level, it's about the Jimmys and the Joes. But that's what their hope is. That's why you fire Taylor Jenkins, is so you can get somebody else in there who maybe turns it around. It's just I don't think that's gonna work.
So, along kind of like synthesizing everything, if you go and you read the ESPN piece today, there seems to be a through line for me through a lot of it. And one of the through lines is, and this is just one man's interpretation, there's a lot of panic moves. So let's start with the opening anecdote. The opening anecdote is the Grizzlies nearly signed Draymond Green. Now, on a personal and professional level, I'm glad that didn't happen, because there's a lot of tape on me talking a lot of ass about Draymond, and I will go on record, I don't hate Draymond Green, the sports person. I hate Draymond Green. So on one level, I'm happy that didn't work. But what you start to see is, well, that didn't happen, so then they kind of panic and pivot to Marcus Smart. And, I think there were physical questions about Marcus, but there were also legitimate, like, this is the guy that you're asking to, like, come in and instill, like, all of the professionalism and what you are asking for from this team. This guy, like, everyone in Boston was like, listen, man, I hope that hip's good. But, like, there are plenty of questions about how he was in the locker room. All right. Then, whether or not it's Marcus can't stay healthy, Marcus isn't in shape, Marcus isn't bought in, you ship him off and you sell him with a first-round draft pick. All right. Then you get to last summer. And basically you decide, well, I don't want to fire the coach, but I want to fire everyone else, which is kind of a panic move, because it's like you're not willing. I said this yesterday and I still believe it. If you were going to put the constraints on Taylor that they did, you were better off just firing him then. But instead, you make him fire everyone that he's basically built his career with, and you bring in a bunch of people that have never worked together. And really what you were saying is, we believe that the answer to our problems, primarily half-court offense, is a scheme. We need a new idea, a new concept. We need a new weapon. That weapon's going to be the one that's going to change the game. And I will just, the moment that I see where an actual scheme leads to playoff success, I'll believe it. Can you talk me into scheme could maybe lead to some regular season success? Fine. But the bigger problem is, why have they fallen short in the playoffs? It's because normally when it becomes nut cutting time, it's somebody having to make a tough shot and a short shot clock, and they don't have great shot makers. And so,
you know what, they actually did have somebody who describes a lot of what it sounds like they were looking for. They had somebody who sort of played their Draymond Green role, their gritty, tough villain role. They had somebody who did a lot of what they hoped Marcus Smart was going to do. They had somebody who would be willing to create their own shot late in the shot clock, whether it was a good shot or not. Dylan Brooks did a lot of those things, Jeffrey. And it sounds to me like they let him walk and then tried to go find Dylan Brooks 2.0 with a little bit better shot selection or a little bit more maturity, and they whiffed and they struck out. And here
Marcus
we are
Smart,
with,
yeah,
with
the same
with nobody filling that role.
Well, I'd have to go back and look. I do think another part of the issue with Dylan, the finance.
Oh, there were issues. I'm not trying to sugarcoat it or misremember it.
No. I'm talking about the financials. I think when the Rockets basically gave them the deal that they had, it kind of priced them out. But to your point, it wouldn't have mattered. They had already decided we're out of the Dylan Brooks business.
Well, they signaled that pretty almost offensively. Well, I mean, they scapegoated out there about it. Like,
they basically scapegoated Dylan. And listen, Dylan makes it very easy on himself. Like, I'm not ignoring that. But they basically said every problem we have is Dylan Brooks.
And oversimplification of it. You know, you wonder how many times over the years have the Warriors brass and even Steve Kerr himself and even Steph Curry and Klay Thompson just wanted to wring his Draymond's neck, right? Like, how many dumb things and difficult situations has he put them in? But sometimes when you have somebody like that who brings what that person brings, you learn to deal with it. It's like you probably played with people who are like this. It's like, this guy's a jerk, but he's our jerk, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, so Golden State had their jerk. The Grizzlies kind of had theirs too, and Dylan. Now they don't have one. Now we got Desmond Bane and Santi Aldama, play fighting in timeouts, and it's like, you know, there is no there's no alpha here anymore.
Well, I mean, in fairness, Santi took Dez's toy.
The basketball.
Yeah. Quick side note. Does your daughter's daycare have the app where like they can like. They'll send you the updates, and then like throughout the day, they'll send you pictures that like make your wife hate that she has to work.
We're starting our daycare in a month, so okay. I don't know the answer.
So my daughter's definitely wearing some boy's like hoodie, and daddy did not care for that. I don't like where that direction was headed. But I think the other thing that frustrates me about this roster. I've been screaming about this for at least 2 years. This team needs more dog. And every single year, they have gotten progressively less tougher and had fewer dogs. And it speaks to me to, they can say this is unfair, whatnot. They don't value it. And maybe it's because you can't put it on a spreadsheet. Maybe it doesn't show up in your draft models. But it's like, this team is soft, and it's the softest team we've had in this iteration of the Morant era.
All right. Well, I'll say this because I think you're right. Oddly enough, I kind of think Edie has some dog in him. I watched a lot of him.
No,
in
I agree. I agree with you. The problem with Edie is he's just always going to be somewhat of a part-time player.
Well, here's the thing, though. Can the new staff or whatever figure out how to unlock him? Because surely when Kleiman in this front office drafted Zach Edey, they had to have more in mind than this, right? I mean, what we're getting from him is so insignificant and spotty, and he's in and out of the lineup. Nobody really seems to understand exactly what his role is. That couldn't have been the vision for Zach Edey. You don't spend a top 10 draft pick on that guy to put him out there to do this, to play at most, what, 19 minutes a game? You know, I mean, it's kind of where it's at, it feels like.
Yeah, I think, honestly, with Tomas, I think Tomas is going to play him more, but he's gotten into foul trouble. So, like, last night, I think he would have played more, but he's gotten, we're back to a young big getting into foul trouble.
Yeah, I do not mean to insinuate that I think Zach Edey is playable in the playoffs.
But you're just talking about, like, we're just trying to get through the rest of these last eight games.
I'm trying to find a dog, and I think Edey could be a dog because, you know, he'll clap back. He'll chirp a little bit. He'll get in a guy's face sometimes. But it's like he's so insecure right now, it feels like. He doesn't know what his role is. He's in the court. He's in the lineup, then he's out of the lineup. The Brandon Clark situation should have brought clarity to Zach Edey's role, right? I mean, you never want to see what happened to Brandon Clark, but sometimes the silver lining in those situations can be that it crystallizes your rotation and makes decisions easy for you as a staff. But, you know, we're watching Zach Edey still kind of fluctuating. Is Jay Huff going to start? right? Like, we got to get that front court rotation nailed down a little bit here. I think that's a pretty serious issue.
You didn't like that 90 seconds of Huff and Aldama yesterday?
It was rough, man. I mean, Aldama's, I feel like, been getting some run at the five in situations too, which is weird.
No, I mean, this is, I think you are right in terms of, I'm not 100% abandoning ship on Edie. And part of this is I got stock. So what am I going to do? You know what I mean? I'm here. I do think the way that he's been, like, and this could be a criticism of Taylor, the way that Taylor kind of jerked him around throughout the lineup. We had some injuries early, you know, where I think he had the ankle, whatnot. So you're going kind of in and out. Then you're getting, you know, then we decide, like, okay, we're going to really go away from the ball screen stuff, and that's going to limit his usefulness. Well, then all of a sudden we get Ja back. We need more ball screens. Like, we've got to do it's. It was like the constant jerking.
Well, that's what this whole thing should be, is Zach Edey at the top of the arc, setting high pick and roll for Zach Edey. Isn't that what we're, I mean, isn't that kind of your fallback at every possession with under 10 seconds on the shot clock? You should be able to get into that pretty easily.
So,
and that should work. He should be effective. If Edey would be effective as a roll man, Morant getting downhill. I mean, come on. I mean, that seems like something we should be seeing a little more of.
I wanted to read these notes to you because these took me by surprise. I'm also, I'll read the note and then I'll get your clarification. For all of his individual gifts, Morant has never been a great pick-and-roll player. He's not even above average, according to ESPN research. Morant averages just 0.99 points per direct pick as the ball handler in his career when he's using an on-ball screen. That ranks 39th among 56 players to run at least 5,000 on-ball screens as the ball handler since 2019-20. He also has just a 44.7 effective field goal percentage on jumpers when coming off of an off-ball screen in his career. Only Russell Westbrook has been worse among 111 players to take at least 750 jumpers when coming off an on-ball screen since 2019 and 2020. So my first thought was, I know that's a huge sample size, but I was also wondering, it's like, how much of that is a Jaren stat? Because I think we've all discussed, one of the big problems with Ja and Jaren is, like, they don't run the two-man game well. But that's a lot of plays. Like, I don't know if that's so much a noisy stat. Because then you can also look, well, with Steven Adams, Steven was not an off. Like, even if he's setting the lead pick, like, that wasn't, Steven wasn't getting involved in the offense. But, like, I do think that's an interesting aspect of this. It's like, are we coming up with every problem? And really, the simplest answer is, you know what the Grizzlies' path to being better is? Ja Morant has to be the 2021-2022 Ja Morant.
All right. And now let me throw you something on Edie right quick.
All right.
Because you know, Jeffrey, I got my
I know. I was gonna ask how we dug in.
I got my synergy here. Let me tell you something about Zach Edie, all right? There have been 47 possessions this season where he's been the role man in the pick and roll. The Grizzlies are averaging 1.53 points per possession when Zach Edey is the role man. That ranks in the 97th percentile in the NBA this season. But they don't do it very often. He's run 47 possessions of that, right? So it's,
and I'd be curious,
if you're gonna have him on the floor, that's gotta be what he does.
Can you break those possessions down? I would imagine of those 47, I would bet at least a third have come in like the last, whatever, like how does Ja's play, like in the last, since Ja returned from All-Star break?
I'll literally find the answer to that for you during the commercial break, but
you can,
yeah, that's one of these things
examples.
Where you drafted this guy, you stuck your neck on the chopping block to go way against the grain drafting Zach Edey. A lot of people, myself included, thought it was a reach and a bizarre decision. However, I gave them the benefit of the doubt saying this: if you draft this guy, it's because you have a clear vision for how he's going to work. I just don't know what that vision is. And moving forward, that's going to be a huge part of how we evaluate Kleiman. And I think it's also going to be a huge part of the way Kleiman approaches this coaching search. Because he knows in the back of his mind that if Zach Edey ends up not panning out or not being anything more than just a role player, like a decent role player, that it's going to be used against him when his performance is evaluated. And so they got to find a coach or a scheme or something that actually validates them drafting Zach Edey. Otherwise, I think this front office is just sort of conceding that their last great shot at a lottery pick was essentially a bust.
Yeah, but I guess, though, what I keep coming back to is all of that I think is true, but it also feels like they're just like constantly searching for the magic bullet. Like, I just don't think, I refuse to believe like the scheme, the, like, it is the NBA more than any sport is truly about the players. It is why of all the major professional sports, it's the one that can be the most predictable. We thought coming into this year, the Thunder were way better than everyone else in the West. Guess what? They're way better than everybody else in the West. I guess you could make the argument Cleveland has exceeded expectations, but people thought, okay, this could be the second best roster in the East. Like, I, you know what I mean? And so Boston's still there, and I don't know. I just keep coming back to, I don't really, I'm done with the, I don't need the Sean McVay. I don't need the Wonderkin. Like, I want the guy that is going to actually get in these guys' faces. And, like, I want the tough guy. Like, is somebody cut from the Ime Udoka cloth where 5 minutes left, he doesn't even really care who's playing. Like, he's going to play who, he doesn't care about the feelings. Like, he's just trying to win. I feel like that's so much of what has frustrated fans to the thousandth degree is you don't feel like everything they do is in the service of winning. You feel like everything they do is like in the service of kind of like putting something, putting a trophy up of like best drafter, best developer, whatnot. It's like, I don't care about that. Like, I just want to like win. And that's not what anything feels like.
You're looking for 2025 Lionel Hollins. And I'll say this, there's an idea. Well, it's just been the vibe around the franchise since they drafted Ja Morant. And I'm not saying it's wrong, but I think it's led them down the wrong path. It's, we got to keep Ja Morant happy. We got our star. We got to keep him happy. We got to keep him happy. We got to coddle him and protect him, right? And
we've never had one of these. We must keep it.
Yes. But I think what that does, I think that does a disservice to Ja. And I think it underestimates Ja's receptiveness to difficult coaching. I think it underestimates the fact that Ja Morant wants to be great. I think it underestimates the extent to which Ja Morant's father pushed him in their driveway when he was growing up. Ja Morant knows how to take tough coaching. Ja Morant's not going to wilt and cry and go home and demand a trade because the coach was mean to him at practice. I think we got to realize, like, Ja Morant wants to be good. He wants to be challenged. He wants to be pushed. That's my belief. That's my interpretation. I was around the guy a lot during his rookie season.
To your point, and T is the number one hater. I mean, I don't know if anymore, but like was historically.
For sure. I mean, yeah, you talk about his dad. His dad, right? His dad was his number one hater. That's what you're saying. So he's used to it, right? And he respects somebody who's going to push him and going to put him out of his comfort zone to try and make him better. And the Grizzlies need to lean into that. That's a positive trait in Ja Morant. You don't have to coddle him. You don't have to say, we don't want to make Ja mad because then he'll demand a trade, right? Like, I understand the fear there, but you, at this point, you can't coach. You can't lead this organization from a standpoint of fear anymore. You've got this window, and you have to capitalize on it because it might be the very best championship window that this franchise has for a very, very long time.
First of all, I think that's a very good point. And secondly, what other choice do you have? Because we've reached the conclusion, really the only button left to push is pray to God that a coaching change takes this to the next level. And I am sure Tomas Iasala is a fabulous coach. Unbelievable basketball mind. There we go. I do not think that's what this team needs. And the other thing that like is also
another white guy who's a schematic.
No, I don't want the chessboard guy. Like I straight up just want the tough guy. Like give me someone cut out of that cloth, because on top of I think this team gets softer. Hey, buddy, you straight up said we doubled down on your triple down on youth. That was a mistake. You can blame circumstances, whatnot. Your team keeps getting younger. How's that working out for them?
Yeah, but at the same time, they're getting younger when they should be getting older around Ja, Dez, and Jaren. They're getting younger around those guys, Zach Edey, Vince Williams, Gigi Jackson. So that's where the Marcus Smart swing and miss kills you. That's where this ESPN article, to me, the most interesting part of it was just the idea that they were so all in on Draymond Green. Like, that almost happened. Draymond Green in a Grizzlies uniform almost happened. And honestly, Jeffrey, I think it might have worked really well. I think having him as the ringleader of this group, it would have deflected some of the attention, some of the scrutiny off of Ja Morant. Draymond Green could have come in and worn all that on his shoulders and just let Ja and Dez and Jaren grow into themselves, whereas instead now we got a situation where those have been the guys who have come under scrutiny, and it's not working.
I'm with you, and as much as I hate him, like, I can see, like, I mean, we made the joke last year, like, part of the reason why I like Zach Edey is, like, I wanted somebody to set the Draymond illegal screens. Like, that could have really helped out. But I think the larger point that I would have is, I don't believe that Draymond Green's the only player in the NBA that could offer that.
He's unique in that he can do it in a way that only Draymond can.
Yeah, but I think what we've also seen is like Dylan Brooks. Like, part of Draymond is clearly the attention that he gets for being Draymond Green, and it's the Warriors. Like, that's a huge part of it. But like, Dylan does the same things. I'm not saying like they should have Dylan back on the roster because there's clearly a different position. But it's like, I just don't think they value it.
No, it's clear in their front court. Edey is the one guy in their front court, and he's a rookie, right? So he's got to find his place, right? But Jaren, I don't want to call him finesse, but he's not the world's toughest guy. Brandon Clark, just a little undersized. Now he's out hurt. Jay Huff is an undrafted free agent who's just out there trying to stay in the league. I mean, no, there is no toughness in this front quarter on this team.
And like, I want to be fair to Jaren, because it's a weird thing where it's like, I think Jaren is physically tough, but he's not a tough guy. Like, for instance, Jaren busts his ankle and he's trying to get back in the game, and the organization's like, nah, you gotta sit it out. Jaren missed the first two games with the hamstring, then played like 59 straight. Like, I think Jaren is a physically tough person. I just don't think he's a tough guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's a difference.
Like, to me, it's like,
which one are you? Are you a tough guy?
I'm not a tough guy, but I was like, I'm a catcher. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm used to just getting hit.
Here's what they need, Jeffrey. Did you watch the I guess it was the Elite Eight game between Texas Tech and Florida?
Every second of it.
And there's this 6'6" power forward for Texas Tech who's
Barian or whatever
Kenny Lofton was.
Yeah.
Y'all remember? You remember? Yeah,
the
Grizzlies guy who was on a two-way there. He's built like Kenneth Lofton. He's backing down folks who are 4 or 5 inches taller than him, getting to his spot every time.
He put some ass into it.
Yeah, I loved it. It was fantastic. And Texas Tech should have won that game. But the Grizzlies need their equivalent of somebody like that who's just who's just a handful to deal with physically. And so I'm with you, man. I'm not saying that, like, the Grizzlies, they don't care, or, like, they're just slender. I mean, they're slender. They're slight of frame. And you can see that when they go up against some more physical teams in the league.
And they're just not athletic. Like, I can't tell how much of the defense is they don't care versus they're slow.
Well, and small to that point.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, Desmond Bane's a bulky guy. He's, you know, he's got some muscle on him, but he's
mass.
He's short. He's got T-Rex arms, man.
Yeah.
I mean,
all right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we've had the coaching carousel spinning. We've got a new move. I want to talk about it with Cobb. Also, I think the coaching carousel in basketball is getting fascinating, and so I want to discuss that with him. We'll do it next right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. This Saturday, April the 5th, Robert Irwin Jewelers in Bartlett is having another 6-hour 60% off sale. It's the real deal. It's a real 60% off sale. There's no marking up to mark down. For 6 hours starting at 10 a.m. on Saturday, you can get 60% off everything in the showcase. Each Robert Irwin Jewelers store only has this once every few years. and so you should take advantage now. 60% off designer jewelry, engagement rings, bracelets, earrings, necklaces, gemstones, even name brand watches are 60% off. You can have over 1,000 items to choose from. Robert Irwin Jewelers also offers special financing. You can take up to 6 months to pay interest-free at Robert Irwin Jewelers. It's in-store only. It's at the Robert Irwin Jewelers in Bartlett at the corner of Bartlett Boulevard and Stage Road right next to the Kroger from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. For complete details, visit rijewelers.com. All right, Cobb, we got the news of the day, which was, I think, largely speculated towards the end of last week with the whole, I don't know, what. Whenever we, I think all the signs were Kevin Willard was leaving for Villanova well before last week, but I think they still had to kind of do a song and dance for the rest of the weekend. But one of the names to initially pop was Buzz Williams from Texas A&M, and now it is official. According to Pete Thamel of ESPN, Buzz Williams has finalized a 6-year deal to become the next head coach at Maryland. The move announced Tuesday by Maryland brings the veteran head coach from the SEC to the Big Ten and marks one of the highest profile moves in the coaching carousel. Williams has reached 11 NCAA tournaments over his 18 years as a head coach, a run that includes 5 consecutive NCAA tournament appearances at Marquette, 3 straight at Va Tech, and each of the last 3 years at Texas A&M. So I think, Cobb, oftentimes, like, I like to use the coaching carousel as kind of a barometer of, all right, where does the market view each job? Would you agree with me? Buzz Williams to Maryland is kind of murky because Buzz is a notorious job hopper. He's willing to take lateral moves, whatnot. And so I don't know if this says anything positively, really, or negatively about Maryland as a job, because I know obviously anytime a coach leaves for another job, like, you have to immediately assess what does it mean by based on who we hire. I think it's a solid hire. Do I think that this is, like, all of a sudden Maryland gets back into the national championship conversation? No, but, like, I think it's a solid hire.
Yeah, you look at where things stood with Kevin Willard and how disastrous that situation seemed. And now you look up and you're like, all right, given all that we just went through and how dramatic it was, we're actually coming out of this okay. Like, if you're a Maryland fan, you actually have to feel okay about this, because Buzz Williams is weird. He doesn't play the most aesthetically pleasing style of basketball, and so I do have questions about whether or not that fan base is going to embrace the sort of booty ball that is Buzz Williams, because they do care about basketball. They do understand basketball. They have won a national championship in this century, albeit it's been almost a quarter of a century now. But he's a good coach. He gets teams to the NCAA tournament. Oftentimes they win games in the NCAA tournament. He's never made a Final Four, but he's like a fringe top 25 coach in the sport. And that's about Maryland's kind of like a fringe top 25 job in the sport. So I think it's a good hire.
And to your point, I mean, I think you could tell when he did the video that came out, you know, the 15 minutes, like, praying for each of his guys at the after they got beat in the first or the second round of the NCAA tournament when they lost to Michigan, like, you could tell he expended a lot of energy into this team. And as you pointed out, they don't even know what they have coming back.
They're rocked, dude. They are rocked by it's not the portal. It's literally
The traditional.
Finally ran out of eligibility.
It's the traditional
Taylor
way.
Was finally done playing college basketball. You go and look up and down that roster. I think he might have had 2-3 scholarship players that could come back, if that, and those were going to be guys that were way down the rotation. So he's looking at this situation. He's seeing, okay, Texas just hired Sean Miller. Texas Tech has it rolling. Houston's in the Final Four. SMU's trying to level up in basketball under any infield. Here I am. I might be the fifth best basketball program in this state. I got to replace my entire roster. And, oh, yeah, by the way, I'm working for my third AD, because it wasn't Bjork who hired him. Now he's got Trev Albert. So who was before Bjork? That's who hired him.
I don't even remember who. Was it? Oh, I'll tell you who it was. It's LSU.
Woodward. Woodward.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's looking
Scott
at this.
Scott Woodward.
Yeah, Scott Woodward. Yeah, so he's saying, I got to restart my clock now. But
how can I remember that? How do I have that detail in my brain? Like, there's no reason to know that. You know what I mean? That doesn't make me money. Doesn't like anything.
Well, if there's anybody who I would expect to know who Texas A&M's athletic director was a decade ago, Jeffrey, it's you.
That's so sad. Well, you bring up an interesting question, though, because now what does A&M do? Because I think we had been trending to most college coaches were looking at, I'm trying to get to the Big Ten, I'm trying to get to the SEC, because those are the jobs that feel like they have stability and like that's where I can be. And with Buzz, obviously, you're going from the SEC to the Big Ten, so it still somewhat fits the profile. But what doesn't fit the profile is that Kevin Willard leaves for the Big Ten to go to the Big East. And I know a lot of Big East supporters, like Ross wrote this, Dellinger of Yahoo wrote this story a couple of weeks ago about how the Big East sees the opportunity because most of these schools don't have football to pay the money. Like, it's one of those details that, like, I can say, okay, I hear you in theory, but I just also look at the amount of money that is going into all these other leagues that's largely coming from television, and when the Big East television deal is going to make $7 million, like, I'm just sitting there going, like, man, I think that's a nice story to tell yourself, but, like, I'm not sure I can get there all the way. But we did just see a guy leave a Big Ten job for a Big East job. And so now what I find kind of interesting is, like, where is A&M? Because as you lay out, like, I think you can clearly say it's behind the Texas job, no questions asked. And the thing that is interesting to me, though, is A&M historically has kind of relied on Houston for talent. Well, is Houston's success Kelvin? Or is it the program is now back in the Big 12? Because, like, what we've seen with SMU is once SMU got into the ACC, like, the money started, spending went up, even though they're not taking any money from the ACC. Like, where does that job go? Because Baylor clearly is going to be invested. And, like, I don't know how to categorize that job, because you said this to me off the air, and I think you were spot on. Like, Buzz kind of weirdly was a pretty good fit for A&M.
100%. He's a weird guy. Texas A&M is a weird school. I mean that in an admirable way. Like, they have their Aggie yell and their little dances and everything.
The class
and they
rings.
Love it, and it's unique. It's college sports, right? It's weird, but it's their thing. And Buzz is weird, and you know he fit in perfectly there. They didn't care that he played an ugly style of basketball because he got results. And when you're at a non-basketball school, they don't care how it looks. They just want results. He gave them results. He was from Texas. So in that sense, it's a little weird that he's leaving. But Jeffrey, do you know how many Elite Eights Texas A&M has been to in basketball?
I'm guessing, since you're asking me, are we at donut?
It's zero. Ole Miss has now officially, under Chris Beard, been farther in the NCAA men's basketball tournament than Texas A&M has.
No. That's Sweet 16.
Huh?
Sweet 16. A&M's been to the Sweet 16 because they played Memphis.
No, that's right. I'm sorry. I was trying
right?
to put
or
Ole Miss
that a, was
in
that
bracket.
A second?
No, that's right. Okay, but still, my point is
they've had to have been to a Sweet 16. I know Buzz didn't get to one, but I think I want to.
No, they have. You're right. I misspoke. But my point was basically, like, for all the people who just assume Chris Beard's gonna beg for the Texas A&M job, he might. But I don't. I'm not convinced that Texas A&M, minus some geographical or personal pull that he might have to the state of Texas, is really that much better of a basketball job than Ole Miss. I mean,
okay,
tell me, like, why would Texas A&M be considered that much better of a job than Ole Miss?
Simply because they are going to have deeper pockets. So do I think average coach at A&M and average coach at Ole Miss could have... I guess I kind of would look at it this way. It's like, I think it's proven that Chris Beard, no matter where he goes, he's going to be better than what the job expectation is. We've seen him do it at every school he's been to, just about. And so I think the real question, though, for Beard is, you know what you've got at Ole Miss, which is you have an athletic director that cares about basketball. You have a president that cares about basketball. I said it last week, and I think I probably told you, but it's like, my understanding is, administratively, Chris Beard gets told no fewer, like, less than even Lane Kiffin does. And I think there's the perception of Lane gets whatever he wants. And Lane doesn't have it bad. Like, I'll say that. But, like, I think that's how good it is at Ole Miss. So how much of it is that versus, A, I don't know, how much does he want to stick it to Texas? Because rightfully, wrongfully, He believes that he should still be the Texas coach. I mean, he was charged with a felony. Like, I do have to point that out. I also don't view, for instance, who is the Stanford coach? Troy Taylor? Is that his name?
Right.
You can tell me Troy got railroaded by Stanford, and I'd be willing to listen to the argument. Texas is not exactly known as, like, cowtailing to, you know, the liberal hippie agenda. And they moved on. Like, they moved on within, what, 36 hours? 48? What was it? It was, like, it was within 2 days.
Well, they had him on leave, and then they officially fired him a few weeks later. But
like, they didn't really hesitate. So, like, but I think he's an awesome coach. And, like, I think if he goes to A&M, like, I think he would have unbelievable success. It's just I don't know if that's the job. Like, Topmeyer and I were talking on Friday. Do I think Chris Beard's retiring at Ole Miss? No, I do not. In fairness, I would have said after 2 years, do I think Lane Kiffin is going to be at Ole Miss in Georgia? What are you going on, year six?
Yeah, something like that.
Did I think Lane Kiffin would make it to year six at Ole Miss? No, I did not.
I think that's what's changed my perception on Beard to A&M and the possibility of that is because if you would ask me what you're saying, is Lane Kiffin going to be around at Ole Miss for what? So this is year six coming
This will
up?
Be year six, yes.
I would have said no, especially not given the success that he's had. I would have thought that he would have used